guy from Philly. I forget his name. I think his name was Steve or something. Great guy. I was just starting to do AA for real this time. And he told me, he's like, you're in a safe place. Like, just stay. You know? And like that was like really special. Like, 'cause it's like, you know what? Like, yeah, I am. Like, this is like a safe spot for me to be in. Like, I don't need to go anywhere. I don't need to not be here, you know? So that like helped me a lot. And I say that to newcomers as well, too.
I heard it through the grapevine.
Welcome. It's the AA Grapevine half-hour variety hour featuring the collected voices of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Sam, an alcoholic in Palm Springs, California.
And I'm Don, an alcoholic in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Donnie, how are you, mister?
Oh, I'm great.
We're
great! Yes, it's wonderful to be sober!
Go eat some Frosted Flakes.
But I'm not going to put any whiskey in my cereal.
That would be about like putting whiskey in your milk, right?
It would be like substituting
be a
whiskey
new version
for
of
milk.
That. Yeah, my gosh, I had a cousin when I was growing up that would put Pepsi on his cereal.
No.
Seriously.
Woo!
Don, I was in a meeting recently. We were reading from the book Came to Believe.
Uh-huh.
And there is a turn of phrase, and I know that you are a word nerd. You are a major fan of turns of phrase.
Oh, I love a turn of phrase.
These four words just got me. Modicum of frantic serenity.
I love it. Yeah.
When I read that, I like, oh my God, I took a picture of the page and sent it to myself so I could.
You want to get a tattoo of modicum of frantic serenity?
Yes. I wonder what, I want you to draw that for me. I need a drawing of what that would look like.
Just a wee bit of frantic serenity.
So the statement, this is from the story Fresh Snow in Came to Believe on pages 12 and 13. The sentence is, while some days may offer only a modicum of frantic serenity, 26 years later, I still know the same inner tranquility that comes with forgiveness of self and the acceptance of God's will. So what does that mean to you? What is a modicum of frantic serenity, Don?
What comes to mind for me is that, you know, alcoholics are enthusiasts. That's what Bill says. And that is because we're a high energy, obsessive people. Enthusiast is a nice way to say high energy, obsessive people.
Now, the first time that you said that, though, your hands were going and your eyes were bugging out. And yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I've still got that. I like hanging out with alcoholics. I like hanging out with sober alcoholics. But I still like hanging out with alcoholics like I did back in the day, because alcoholics have all that crazy energy. And so I take this that, even though I'm sober, he says, 26 years, I still have some frantic energy in there, just a modicum, you know, which is a wee little bit.
Thank you for defining that for. A modicum of.
Wait a minute, I got to define wee.
Didn't you do that before we started? Frantic serenity. To me, that is talking about that I'm in that Tasmanian devil moment.
Yes.
You know, I'm about to spin up and I can choose not to spin up.
Yes.
But it's not like when I get up in the morning and I go sit out on the balcony here and I look at the mountain and I just like breathe and listen to the birds and that serenity. It's not that. Mm-hmm. It's okay, I'm good. Everything's, I don't need to react to this. Everything's, that person pulled out in front of me and is driving 12 miles below the speed limit and it's okay. whatever.
Yeah.
It's that frantic serenity that is me arresting the spinning up.
Yeah, like you can feel the edge of panic or the edge of this is not going my way or whatever. And I can see it and then pull back a little bit. That's what you're talking about. While some days may offer only a modicum of frantic serenity, 26 years later, I still know the same inner tranquility that comes with forgiveness of self and acceptance of God's will. So I guess what it's saying is that we never get completely well.
You know, thank God we don't all have a bad day at the same time.
Yeah. you know, the nice thing is today I'm great.
I'm terrified.
Who's our guest today?
Well, Don, today we welcome Scotty G from Newtown, Pennsylvania.
All right. I'm going to ask him to beam me up. I bet he's heard that before.
You can give a gift subscription of Grapevine or Lavinia.
Grapevine has a long waiting list of incarcerated members who want one. Get your group, district, area, or AA friends to join in.
It's easy. Go to aagrapevine.org and look for Carry the Message at the top of the site.
Hey guys, my name's Scott. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 15th of 2019. I have a sponsor who I keep in regular contact with. I have a home group. My home group is the Young Men's Group. It's in Horsham, PA. We meet on Tuesdays at 7 o'clock, and then we also meet Sundays at 8 a.m. in the morning as well. It's a big book study and a speaker meeting every other week, and it's an all-men's meeting.
Scotty, how old are you?
I'm 21.
21, and you got sober in 2019.
Yes.
And you're already going to an 8 a.m. meeting.
Well, I go, you know, I try to make that one.
There's some honesty there, right?
I'm always there Tuesdays, right?
I'm curious. So I've definitely been to men's meetings over the years, but I've never heard of a young men's meeting. Now, is it a WIPOC group?
No. The funny thing is that I'm the youngest one there. You know, it's a bunch of middle-aged men with kids that are like Philadelphia firefighters or union workers. It's a bunch of tradesmen.
Oh, okay. So they're young compared to Don. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, sure.
Almost everybody. It's that category.
So you've never had a legal drink in your life?
I've never had a legal drink, no.
Don't do it now. It's not worth it.
No.
Well, what happened to you that brought you to AA? Not externally. What happened inside of you?
Okay. That simples it up a lot for me because the internal is usually like the only thing that really matters because my sponsor talks about it a lot and I talk about it a lot with my sponsees. You know, like a rock bottom doesn't really have anything to do with like any outside circumstances. It has everything to do with like internal. Because I know plenty of people in 2019 that have had it much worse than me on the outside that might have not gotten sober. But for me, I felt so like emotionally low that there was nothing in this world that could make me feel worse than the way that I felt. That's the best way to explain it. Like I couldn't feel any more hopeless. I couldn't feel any more afraid. I couldn't feel any more like depressed. Like it just, my emotions weren't getting any lower. That's the best way I could explain it. Like if some outside circumstance were to happen that would have been tragic, I couldn't even feel it. That wouldn't have been able to make me feel worse.
And were you pouring alcohol on that, trying to feel something or?
That was actually when I had 2 months sober. I had my rock bottom in sobriety. I was going to one meeting a week. I was in IOP. Yeah, I was treating that like a joke and going to one meeting a week and didn't have a sponsor, wasn't doing the steps. And what I come to find out is like alcoholics actually get worse when they aren't working a program. You know, when they're just staying sober, they get worse emotionally. And that's what happened.
Say that again for the people on the back row.
Okay. When I'm not working a program, I get worse when I'm sober than when I was drinking. And that was my experience. I was carrying on. You know, 2 months of sobriety, getting worse every single day. So I wasn't pouring alcohol into those feelings at all. I was just straight up sober.
That's a really hard place to be, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was the best place I could ever be in that moment because I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for that low, you know?
There was a moment of total crash, emotional spiritual. That's what happened to me. It's like, yeah. I didn't have an external bottom that anyone would look at and say, oh, you know, his life is destroyed. I just could see that my life was going to be destroyed. And I could see that I was completely controlled by alcohol. And sure. I had an emotional, and now I look at it and see it as a spiritual bottom where I just crashed. And it's like, tell me what to do. I am screwed.
Yeah. I could relate to that a lot as well.
Yeah. So 2 months sober, going to a meeting a week, you hit this bottom. Then what did you do?
I was actually in a mental institution, like kind of like a psych ward a little bit, in that I got like shipped off 2 months sober, throwing chairs at my mom, my dad screaming at him, sober, by the way. And what I did after that bottom, I got out of there and I started to listen. Because I finally felt like, man, I don't want to feel this way anymore. You know, I finally had that moment where I was like, I want to change now. I'm sick of feeling this way and living this life. So what happened, what I did was it very simple. I got a sponsor. I followed his suggestions. I got close with God and that's it. Like, it was that simple. It wasn't easy, but it was very simple. It was very simple, clear-cut direction that I just had to follow.
What do you mean you got close with God? Can you describe that?
Yeah. When I came into AA, I came into AA with a spiritual blockage, blocked off with fears and resentments and harms and defects of character. And that completely blocked me off from God in every way, shape, and form. I wasn't close with God before I started drinking. I wasn't close with God while I was drinking. If I was, I wouldn't have landed in AA, right? And what I did was the steps, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is what got me close and connected with God, because I started to get rid of the fears and the resentments and the harms and started to become more aware of my defects of character and worked on them and made the decision right at step 3 to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. I did the steps and I started to pray every morning, and I started to pray at night, and I started to meditate, and I started to go to God for everything, like for advice, for even, right, I'm a single man, right? Even when I go out on dates, I pray. You know, before I go.
What is your prayer? Because I'm looking at this from the point of view of back when I was drinking and hearing about AA. So what are you talking about?
Yeah. So in the beginning, I think it's as simple as like, God, keep me sober today. And God, thank you for giving me the opportunity to stay sober. And the further along you go through the 12 steps, the prayers get like more intimate and deeper. That was my experience. Like it went from like, God, keep me sober, thanks for keeping me sober, to like, God, I pray that you help me like deal with this resentment in the most healthy way possible. Or like, or saying the sick man's prayer, right? Like, help me look at this person as if they're spiritually, you know, give me the same tolerance, patience, and pity that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend, or praying like, God, I pray that you remove me of this fear and help me think about what you would have me be. But it's also things like, God, I pray that you help me be aware if I'm selfish today. God, I pray that you help me be honest. You know, God, I pray that you help me be the best sponsor that I could be towards my sponsees, right? Help me, you know, help me do things that are positive for other people, regardless if I want to or not. And things like that. And sometimes it's even like conversations, like, we got to talk, you know, and I'm like chatting with God for like 30 minutes, man, about like some selfish thing that I'm obsessed about, right? And God points me in the direction and helps me realize like, oh, okay, got it, you know? And so the relationship, you get closer and closer, and I need that, especially where I'm at now at 4 years sober. I think I need to be even more closer with God sometimes, because I feel like I'm more aware of even more of my defects of character. And like, you know, because when I got 6 months, I'm feeling the spiritual experience and I'm feeling great. And I'm like, but now with 4 years sober, right, I don't have that same eye-opening moment where I feel like my defects of character might be flaring up more, and I might be more aware of it and upset about my Cadillac problems. And
so you might have a modicum of frantic serenity.
Yes. Yes. And I love what you guys were talking about there, because I think it's so true that I have those a lot. And I'm like, okay, wait, like, you know, like stuff like that. I have that a lot.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that you pray before going on a date.
Yes.
Would you talk about that?
Sure. It's as simple as it's not up to me who I date. If I want to turn everything over to God, that's everything, you know? I kind of just pray like, you know, because I have my own fears in sexual relations, and I have my own stuff. I think everybody does,
Who
right?
doesn't?
Right. And I think it's more so asking God to give me the opportunity to be like authentic and not let those things flare up. And like, if you see fit for me to be with this person, like, you know, let it happen. If not, like, do your thing, whatever. I think that's really important, especially now, because I'm 21 years old, right? Obviously, I think about girls a lot. It's important for me to have God a part of that, because I know on my own will, with my own ideas, it's not gonna either be as special, it's not gonna work out the way that it's supposed to. Like I'm more afraid of like something happening without God in it versus like, you know, God taking care of it, and regardless of the timing. And
That kind of prayer changes my behavior.
yeah.
And the fact that it changes my behavior, I mean, I don't hear a different voice, like the voice of God coming to me and saying, Don, the
The
answer
answer
is.
is.
Like, I had a friend who his mother had died. So I wanted to go support him. I didn't know anybody there. And I pulled into the lot of the funeral home and I just felt this wave of fear. I don't want to do this. I don't want to go in there. I don't know what to do. And I said a prayer. Show me how to be helpful. Show me what to do. You know, take this fear away. And my behavior changed. I went in, and sure enough, there was a lot I could do to be helpful. I mean, he had to do this line and stand there and greet everybody after. And I saw at one point, you want some water? He's going, oh, I'd love some water. I went and got water and came back.
I just got to point out here that I find it interesting that the same prayer works for sex and for funerals.
Yes,
That's
It
awful. It's true.
does.
It's so true.
Because the point is for me not to be a jerk
Yeah. Yeah.
in both cases.
It truly, and that's what this inventory process is about in so many ways of like uncovering, disclosing to myself the ways that I'm a jerk that I've been unaware of or
Yeah.
that I've known and I've just kind of stuffed down. And it's like, and realizing that, wow, I can do things differently.
Yeah.
Or I'm insecure and I used to drink and overcompensate for that. An abrasive way that could be obnoxious. And I don't have to do that with these tools that we learn in AA.
Yeah.
Scotty, you said that you are sponsoring guys.
Yes.
Let's see, you're 4 years sober. Where in that journey did you start sponsoring?
I think I got my first sponsee when I had about maybe like 8 months sober.
All right.
I was 17 years old and I had no clue what I was doing. I had no clue what I was doing. I was so nervous, and I wasn't as confident as I am today with the big book. In the beginning, I didn't really have any sponsees in those early times that really stuck and stayed with us, you know.
But you
Which,
did.
yeah,
Yes.
100%.
Scotty, what does sponsorship look like with you? How do you sponsor someone?
Okay, I take guys through the steps the same way my sponsor did. I make sure my sponsees get a home group and a service position in their home group before we do the steps, because you need a foundation. You know, when you build a house, you start on the foundation, you don't start at the roof. And whatever the big book tells us to do, we do it. If it tells us to write, we write. If it tells us to pray, we pray. And I sit across my sponsee and we open up the book and I read it to him the same way my sponsor read the big book to me. And we break it down and we talk about it and we share our experience. I share a little bit of mine. He shares a little bit of his. I help him understand what we're reading a little bit more. And we do a couple exercises. We do an exercise in Bill's story where we highlight from pages 1 to 9 how we thought, felt, and drank like Bill. And then we talk about it. And that's like a great experience, because if I could relate to one of the co-founders of AA, I really belong here, especially somebody from the 30s.
I heard something in a meeting this week that I had never heard before that just struck me, and it
Yeah.
is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous was not written for you. It was written about you.
Yeah.
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 My sponsor told me to mark out Bill and Bill's story and write Don, which sounds like the same thing you're doing, Scotty.
Yeah, very, very similar. And it's funny, too, like, because in the beginning, I didn't understand the big book. The language was so foreign, right? So I had, like, my mom, like, read the big book to me while I was going through Bill's story. And I was like, oh, I can relate to that. And then, like, I would be like, wait, what does that mean? Like, the boomerang one, like, from... I have my big book with me now. I could read it off if it's whatever.
Yeah, go get it and read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. As you can see, my big book is being put to use very well.
All right. He's already got a big book that looks like 20 years of study.
Yeah.
The loose leaf big book.
Yeah, it was this part, right? Like, I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. You know, something like that. Like, I come up with this solution in my life that I think works so well, and then it comes around and bites me in the butt, you know?
Yes.
So things like that is so important, especially hearing that, like, so early on in the process and being like, wow, that's me to a T. And other things that I could relate to with Bill. There's so much, but I'm not going to read it all, right? And then we do an exercise and we agnostics, like on page 47, where it says, do not let any prejudice you may have against what they mean to you, right? Those spirit, those God words, those capitalized letters. My sponsor had me stop there. So I have guys like, stop, we stop there. And I have them do an exercise where they skim through the rest of We Agnostics and they underline the capitalized words and they write down what it means to them. And what does that do? It helps you come up with your own conception of what God is.
Dude, that is so practical. I love that.
That's great.
Hey, Scotty, you got room for another sponsee?
Really? Scotty, I got to say, you have the most beautiful way of describing how this thing works and conveying it to another person.
Thank you.
I wish we could talk to you more, but we're going to go to the Ask It Basket. Someone wrote in a question, and we're going to have to get your point of view at the end of this as well.
Of course.
It's time for the Ask It Basket.
What's that?
That's the name Bill W. gave the basket that was passed around for questions. We want your questions for our guests.
General recovery questions? Newcomer questions? AA history?
Got a question for the Ask It Basket? Go to aagrapevine.org and click on podcast.
And now, let's dip into the basket.
So a listener asked us, where did we get the chip idea? Chips for 30 days, 60 days, etc.? That's a great question. Where did the chips go? What's the history of the chips in AA? So we contacted the General Service Office, and they sent back a wealth of information. Part of it is this reply.
Greetings from the archives at the GSO. It is a pleasure to be in touch with you. Unfortunately, we do not know exactly how or when the tradition of giving out tokens, chips, medallions began. Early correspondence indicates that it might have started in Indianapolis in 1942. However, we are unable to confirm this. In response to this same question, Nell Wing, the first AA archivist, once wrote that most of the early groups started in 1940, and it would take about a couple of years to think of anniversaries and marking any time in sobriety. The use of tokens within the fellowship was also addressed in the 1958 General Service Conference report. An excerpt from this report states, "Delegates were asked to record the attitude of the movement as a whole toward the use of so-called AA chips, tokens, lapel emblems, and similar devices. Discussion from the floor indicated that items of this type are extremely popular in certain areas, while they are used little or not at all in other sections of the U.S. and Canada. In one area, chips are awarded for 3, 5, and 12 months of sobriety."
So the Grapevine magazine started in June 1944. The General Service Office sent us a few early articles that talked about the chips. Let's read a few excerpts. The earliest mention of the chips was in the magazine in January 1947. There's an article, "Raking in the Chips." "When members of the group start out, they're given a white poker chip as an AA reminder. After 3 months, an AA red chip is given out. After a year, a blue chip goes into the pocket. At the Blue Chip presentation, the host brought out a now unused cocktail shaker draped with a black ribbon and used it for serving coffee.
Oh, my God.
Can you believe that? I think we have grown so we avoid alcohol paraphernalia in the meetings.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea, too. This is from the Grapevine in January 1955. RGW from Charlotte, North Carolina wrote, "I'm writing about the chip system because I had never heard of it before coming south, and I thought perhaps others might be as impressed with it as I was."
From Grapevine, April 1959, TCW from Patterson, New Jersey, writes in with his pet peeve, "Some groups place too much emphasis on three-month pins and long-term periods of sobriety. This approach can be very discouraging to a struggling beginner. Why add to his problem by making such distant goals too prominent? If a goal is necessary, make it tomorrow. Show the newcomer the way you learn to apply the one day at a time approach." It's a good point.
It is. And as late as the Grapevine, May 1982, C.A. from Springfield, Massachusetts, writes an information article about chips as if everyone doesn't know about them. "These different colored chips can be measures of our return to sanity. Many AA meetings have what is called the chip system. Certain lengths of sobriety are rewarded with different colored poker chips. The short ceremony performed at the beginning of the meeting is ad-libbed rather than read, unlike the preamble and how it works." Scotty, have anything you want to say around this?
Also, I have no clue where like chips and medallions came from, but if you're looking for like my opinion on why I think that it's a good thing for there to be coins and medallions and for anniversaries, it's at this regular meeting that I go to. It's the Wednesday night beginners meeting at 8 o'clock in Flowertown. People go up and get their coins, right? And my buddy Joey, if somebody's like, "I don't want to go up and get my coin," it's, you should go up and get your coin because it's for the newcomer to see that happening. Yeah. You know, it's me getting a coin isn't really for me, come to find out. It's so the newcomer could see that this thing works.
There you go.
I think it's also important to celebrate these things because we couldn't even imagine staying sober for like, you know, 24 hours.
I find that this is one of those fabulous gray areas that we get to have. There's this gray area about marking time in sobriety. I think it is absolutely a service to the newcomer to see someone marking long-term sobriety, be that, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, whatever it is. But then I also have this sense of empathy of the newcomer who is struggling to get going, to get his feet under him. And it's that person that I feel so sorry for when they're having to pick up that start chip and another start chip and yeah. another start chip. Because I was that person. I remember I picked up a chip in a candlelight meeting one time, and that was the most comfortable I ever felt picking up a start over chip because you couldn't see what was going on my face.
Well, Sam, when I first came in, I never picked up a start over chip, and every chip was really a sense of achievement. And it's like, I'm okay. I'm moving forward in this program, but it sounds like if you're picking start over chips, it can be very defeating. Mm-hmm. Although it is surrender and defeat that we need to feel to get started. So yeah. It is hard. It's one of the paradoxes in AA, and it sounds like it's been with us since the beginning that we stay sober one day at a time, but we keep count.
That's it. Thanks so much to the listener who sent in that question. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for writing in. And please, folks, send us some questions for the Ask It Basket.
Scotty, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real joy getting to know you.
I appreciate it. It's been a joy getting to know you as well.
Take care, Scotty.
Thank you.
The Grapevine strives to be self-supporting.
Please subscribe to the magazine or app and visit the Grapevine online store.
The app is free in your phone's app store and has great content and features provided at no cost to you.
But if you subscribe, you get so much more. And you support all things Grapevine, including this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
only $2.99 a month.
This Wit's End is from David S., Redwood City, California.
A guy gets stopped by a policeman for public drunkenness.
All right, you there. Oh, me, officer? Well, whoops! Yeah, you with the brown bag, bothering all the customers. Stand up, sir. Say your ABCs backwards for me, please. ABCs? Backwards? Officer, I couldn't do that if I was sober.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear.
It's really not that funny. Thanks for joining us. The AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour is posted every Monday and is produced by AA Grapevine, Inc. We don't speak for AA as a whole. We share the experience, strength, and hope of members to help others recover from alcoholism. Podcast info, including how to call in, is at aagrapevine.org/podcast. Search AA Grapevine in the App Store on your phone or find AA Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube. All things Grapevine are available at aagrapevine.org. If you want to know more about AA, search online for Alcoholics Anonymous in your city or visit aa.org.
That was freaking amazing.